This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Donald Trump has said he wanted to drain the swamp when he ran for president, but all he's done since entering the White House is flood the swamp with industry representatives and lobbyists. Goldman Sachs and ExxonMobil can rest easy knowing that their interests will be easily represented in the Trump administration. But what about the rest of us? What about the interests of ordinary Americans that often clash with that of profit-driven corporate elites? Well, it turns out it's not so difficult to influence our own government, and today we'll look at several examples of how ordinary Americans have become empowered citizen lobbyists. My guest is Sam Daly Harris, CEO of the Center for Citizen Empowerment and Transformation. He's also the founder of Results, a group that has advocated for effective solutions to the causes of poverty. And he's the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government. Welcome to the program, Sam.
It's great to be with you.
So first, let's talk about Citizens Climate Lobby, which is this organization that was featured in the New York Times that you've consulted with, that you've helped train into becoming much more effective than people think ordinary Americans can be. And I suppose it's not surprising that the New York Times chose to focus on this in this time today when not only do Americans feel sort of disempowered with what's happening in Washington, but on the issue of climate in particular, which, you know, on which time is rapidly running out, it feels like it's the end of the road. What is Citizens Climate Lobby and what do they do?
Well, I would like to start with a quote that talks to our predicament and then tell you what they do. This is from Francis Morlapay, who wrote Diet for a Small Planet, but in a more recent book, Getting Grip 2, she said, "Our real problem is not a heating planet or rampant malnutrition. We only have one real problem, our own feelings of powerlessness to manifest the solutions right in front of our noses," end of quote. And so what Citizens Climate Lobby does, and a number of the other groups I work with, is that they provide a structure of support that's strong enough to dissolve the powerlessness. And so let me give you an example. They have a monthly webinar with 1,000 to 2,000 people on the call every month before Trump, actually more after President Trump, another 1,000 listening to the recording the week afterward. And so that people are encouraged to form into groups in their cities and to work together, and they hear guest speakers and Q&A. And the outcome is, as an example, at the time of the election in November, there was a relatively new House Climate Solutions Caucus, and there were 6 Republicans and 6 Democrats on the caucus. Today, there are 24 Republicans, 24 Democrats. About 18 have joined since the inauguration. And so the question is, how is it that ordinary citizens are getting empowered to get 24 Republicans and 24 Democrats to join the Citizen Climate Solutions Caucus in Congress, when 2 or 3 years ago, you couldn't have gotten one Republican on board? And so.
Now, it's what's interesting about this lobby group, Citizens Lobby Group, is that the idea that they're rallying behind or advocating is a specific one. It's not this vague, open-ended thing, right? So how important is the fact that they're asking for people to, congressmen and women, to sign on to something specific? And what is that specific thing they're asking them to do?
Well, yeah, their particular policy push is, they call it carbon fee and dividend. And basically what it is a steadily rising tax on carbon fully refunded to the public. Carbon fee and the dividend is back to the public. A carbon tax, even refunded to the public, is a tough sell any year. But they've been working on this year in, year out. Last year, they had 1,388 meetings with members of Congress or their staff. And in 2010, when they were much smaller, they had 106 meetings with Congress or their staff. You know, they had 2,850 letters, op-eds, and editorials published last year, up from 65 in 2010. So there's this building, you might say, grassroots muscle for this policy initiative, which looked pretty hopeless 5 years ago. But they're like the little engine that could. You know, they just keep on going and keep on growing. And,
so how do they explain to the members of Congress why a carbon fee that keeps increasing and is payable back to the public, why it's not only fair and just, but can actually address climate change? What do they do with those members of Congress who don't even accept climate change is caused by humans? Or do they sort of choose not to bother with those people?
No, they're bothering with everyone, actually. They just had their meeting in Washington last month. They had 1,300 people come to Washington, up from 25 in 2010. And they only let the first 1,000 go to Capitol Hill. The basic thought is if you go to the congressman's office with 17 people, that's too many and you meet out in the hallway. So they wanted to keep the delegation small. They had over 500 meetings that day in Washington, and they had 399 back home since January before they got there. So it's just this amazing outpouring of engagement. You said, how do they do it, or what do they do with a member of Congress? I want to put it this way. One thing they really start with is listening. What are their opinions on climate change? Is it human caused? Just from the very basics. And they actually start with some kind of acknowledgement. In the article in the New York Times in May, they talked about a congressman in Long Island who said something like, "You guys are nuts. You came and you thanked me for things. Nobody thanks me for anything." And then the volunteer said they'd had 32 meetings with the congressman or his staff after that, and he was the fifth Republican to join the Climate Solutions Caucus. And so there's a level of listening and a level of appreciation that's really critical to then moving forward with their ask, whatever their ask is, whether it's the carbon fee and dividend or joining the Climate Solutions Caucus or whatever.
So Sam, we loathe the word lobbyist for obvious reasons, because they're usually paid by industry to represent their interests over others' interests. But of course, the reason why there are lobbyists and lobbyists are so well paid is because that personal relationship and interaction with our elected officials works, right? Is that the basis for what Citizens Climate Lobby is doing?
It's a central piece of the basis. Let me give you one more quote from Lawrence Lessig, the Harvard professor, who said, "We did a poll and found that 96% of Americans want money out of politics, but 91% think it isn't possible." That's the politics of resignation. But the politics of resignation gives you a way forward. If we can find a way to thaw the resignation, we can find a way to winning. So one of the Citizens Climate Lobby strategies and the other groups I work with is to thaw the resignation on their issue. So that's one piece of it. And then yes, after that, it gets to meeting with members of Congress on the issue and quite frankly, preparing and practicing before you go in there and not just going in there and winging it. If I could say, I did a talk at my wife's church last Sunday, and they'd set up chairs for 40 people and 70 showed up. And the name of the talk was "Writing Checks, Signing Petitions, and Protest Marches. Is That All There Is?" And I told the group that I have this new title for the talk, which is, "Are Shouting and Silence the Only Two Options? Bringing Bipartisanship and Transformation to Political Activism." I'm clear that resistance is critical. Without resistance, we probably have a Republican healthcare bill signed into law. So I'm clear that the resistance movement can really help stop bad things from happening. But there can't be only resistance. There have to be some other groups who are working in some kind of bipartisan way to work to get good things to happen, not just stop bad things from happening.
So how big is this group? Where are its members located? You alluded that it has gotten bigger, that you started out with a small number and now it numbers over 1,000. Tell us, give us a sense of how much more people have gotten engaged, at least just through this one group, Citizens Climate Lobby.
Yeah, well, again, they had 25 at their conference in 2010 and 1,300 last month. They had 14 chapters in 2010 and 400 now. They have 60,000 the hard way, not where you buy lists, but what where people talk to people and they read articles and they come on board. But when it comes to the activists, you know, quite frankly, with 1,000 to 2,000 on their monthly conference call, another 1,000 listening to the week after, I'd estimate there might be 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 who are really active, but they're really active and month in, month out active, not one trip to Washington once a year and then they're done, but not just the petitions and the like, but they had 40,000 personally written letters to Congress
wow.
in the first 6 months of this year.
That's amazing.
They've had 2,028 letters, op-eds, and editorials published in the first 6 months of this year. They've had 936 meetings with Congress or their staff in the first 6 months of this year. So it's a really alive movement.
And so, Sam, I'm assuming these are all volunteers. They have day jobs. This is what they do because they're deeply committed to it. And they find a way to make time to make it happen, which of course is hard for ordinary people, but I suppose these people manage to do it.
Well, you know, for one thing, I think deep down all of us want to make a difference. But on top of the want to make a difference is resignation, powerlessness.
Right, how to make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. And so you look at a group like this or the group that I founded, Results. I mean, when we first started lobbying Results, UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, was reporting 41,000 children dying every day. This is the early 80s, from preventable things, measles with malnutrition and whatever. Now it's 16,000 a day instead of 41,000 a day. People want to be part of that. They just don't see where or how they can make a difference. And so I'm working with a number of groups on different issues that are doing the same kind of deeper advocacy, this bipartisanship, and working to go deeper with members of Congress.
So, Sam, how can ordinary people get involved? First of all, if they like the idea of Citizens Climate Lobby, but also if maybe they're already in an existing organization or want to start a new organization, a different issue, and like this model of organizing that that we've been discussing.
Well, they should contact me. My website is citizenempowermentandtransformation.org. It's the Center for Citizen Empowerment and Transformation. And so I'd love to connect with other groups that want to learn from this kind of work. But there are groups like Results on Ending Global and Domestic Poverty. They've got their hands full these days. Results.org. American Promise is working to overturn Citizens United. AmericanPromise.net. The Quaker Lobby, FCNL.org, is working to reduce the Pentagon budget. And another group that I'm working with that should be checked out, Generation180.org. And they've got a Keep It Cool campaign to really get companies to close their doors during the summer so we save the energy all around the country.
So do you also suggest that ordinary people who might already be involved in existing organizations but don't really think about lobbying Congress as something that they feel is effective, that they really start thinking about that, that it's one thing to, have marches in the streets or to maybe have Facebook posts or email alerts, but another thing to actually go to Washington, D.C., or not even necessarily go, just simply go to their members of Congress's offices when they're in recess and have face-to-face meetings.
Oh, big time. It's critical. I was asked by a columnist, what do you do to address the Trump agenda? And I said, get with your member of Congress. You can do it in the resistance mode. If that's not your cup of tea, you can do it in this more bipartisan mode, but don't make it namby-pammy. Make it powerful. And you can check out one of these groups to see what could be brought over to the work that you're already doing. But members of Congress are going to cut the EPA by 31% as the president requested, or they aren't. Congress is going to increase the defense budget by $54 billion like the president requested, or they aren't. That's where our voice is in making good things happen and stopping bad things from happening.
Well, Sam, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and hopefully we've left some people inspired to be more active citizens. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
My guest is Sam Daly-Harris. He's CEO of the Center for Citizen Empowerment and Transformation, also the founder of Results, a group that has advocated for effective solutions to the causes of poverty. And he's the author of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Healing the Break Between People and Government. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all the links that we mention on the air. Also sign up for our daily newsletter. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.